Let's go. Yeah, make it look easy. Hey, stand up guy, boom, 10 toes. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Art of the Game with Arthur Hurst, where we sit down with student athletes to talk about the game of life. And today, we have a man who's a monster. Tall, athletic, can spread the floor. And on campus, it's like, man, who is this giant? We have the man, Mr. Joshua Hughes. Welcome, man. How you doing, sir?
Good, man.
Joshua Hughes, a freshman basketball player for the University of Evansville's men's basketball team. But you're wrapping up your freshman year, dog. And how does that feel?
Dude, I mean, it's at the same time, it feels like it's blown by. Like, doesn't feel that long ago I got here, but looking back at all the training we've done, it also feels like it's been a while.
So,
You know, basketball's a year-round sport. Feels like we've been going for a while now, but same time looking back on it, it's gone quickly.
So what are the off-season goals for this summer? You know, getting fit, conditioning a whole lot more. What you looking for to improve on your game as far as when next season comes?
Seriously, just this past week, I've been meeting with nearly all my coaches, just talking about what we need to be doing. And the big one was put on some mass, get some weight in the gym. So I'm in there 5 days a week right now, loving it, and really just working on the game. You know, what can I do to be more dominant? You know, they started switching guards onto me at the end of the year. So how can I score on the big guys? But then also how I can, you know, take advantage of my size and score on the smaller guys.
So when I was overseas, I had a opportunity to be able to study abroad at Harlingston for a semester. And one of the things that I noticed real quick and early on, the portions are very, very different from overseas to America. So how are the portions over here in America going for you?
I mean, yeah, I love it. Food's one of my things, so I really couldn't complain about the bigger food.
I heard that team dinners, everybody's like, hey, Josh, we waiting on you, dog. We're going to have to let you eat.
Yeah, I mean, they've been almost forcing me to order two meals every time we go out. So, you know, I'm loving it and getting two steaks a night. Can't complain.
Okay. Hey, got to do what you got to do. But hey, man, what about your upbringing? Talk about that. You're from Brisbane, Australia. Ryan, you come over here, but talk about your upbringing.
So, you know, I was obviously a young fella and I was brought up as an only child. So, you know, I got used to playing with myself and making use of my own time. And then later on, I got some step siblings, half siblings, and, you know, got that more of an older brother. I'm the oldest out of all those, and got that sort of part of my life down pat, and almost got to lead them a bit, I guess, punch on them a bit, teach them what's right in the backyard. But yeah, look, my upbringing, really great. I've had a great family. My mom's taught me well. My dad's taught me well. And really couldn't complain about any of that. And I guess basketball, I was a very long child, very long baby. So when my granddad saw me, you know, he kind of brought a Brisbane Bullets basketball. That's the professional team down there in Brisbane. And he got me a basketball, and, you know, there's a picture of me probably maybe 4 months old, hunched over it, and grew up with that around the house. And that's pretty much how I got.
So it was basically fate.
I had no choice.
So we have high school sports over here, but you guys, you don't have high school sports. Was it more like club sports, or what's it like back home?
Yeah. So some of the private schools have high school sports, and that's like, we call that GPS. I'm not sure what that stands for, but, you know, that's GPS sports, and they'll play against each other. And honestly, it's all right. Probably not the best. Probably about high school level here. But yeah, really small. And then the public schools, so we have high school sports, but it's awful. You know, you're playing on an outdoor court and you're with no net and it's windy, but and anyone can sign up for that. So no coaching, no training. That's what I did a little bit of, just for fun on a Tuesday afternoon to miss some school. But my main sort of basketball and what everyone does back home is, yeah, so club sports, So for me, what it was, you know, you get into your club when you're about, for me, it was like 7, 8 years old. I started really early basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I actually started playing at 4. As I said, I had that
mm-hmm.
basketball, picked it up. Anyway, got involved with the club when I was like 4 years old, went through that. Then eventually I got into, you know, the under 12s, under 14s. And you go from your club to your representative area, which is like, for me, it was all of North Brisbane. So kind of like a county, I guess, if you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have counties in Australia. But yeah, so you go into your representative, and then the next step up from that is you play for your state. So, you know, we're getting into like Indiana versus Kentucky, New York versus California, all that. And that's where you really come through. So my state was Queensland, and that's when, you know, the college coaches are watching, the Australian coaches are watching. That's when the games are on. So I was actually fortunate enough to play all the years that I could. I played bottom age 16s all the way through to top age 18s just before I came here. And yeah, that was my road through those club sports.
So when did you get to the NBA Academy?
It's a pretty long story, but the NBA Academy is kind of a paired program with Basketball Australia's Centre of Excellence. So we, you know, I'd done some camps with Australia, and as a young fella trying to, you know, just showcase my skill in front of those Australian coaches and hopefully earn my scholarship there one day. So with that, the NBA Academy coaches were also looking, and I got there, did some camps, did a lot of training, trying to just show off my skill, and eventually got the call up, you know, maybe a few months later when I was 15 to, you know, go on, make the move and see if I can hold my own against some older boys.
Mm-hmm.
So got down to Australia's capital in Canberra just after grade 10. And right for grade 11, I was starting that at 17 years old.
So some notable players from the NBA Academy: Josh Giddey, Ben Mathurin, Dyson Daniels as well. What's the experience like being able to play, you know, at such a young age? Again, you were 15 when you started. What's the experience like to be able to get that professional type development at that age?
You can't compare it to any other I've had, really. The biggest thing for me I would speak about would be the mental side of it. Like, just seeing how those guys, you know, as I said, I was pretty young going into that. I was 16, 17. Just seeing how those guys carry themselves and the development those guys made, well, because they were 19, 20.
Mm-hmm.
Just being able to see those guys and how they go about their life, how they carry themselves, and just seeing the development they had and how quickly they really took off and got good. You know, Dyson especially, I was actually rooming with him at one point.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, just seeing how he would go about his life and then take it to the basketball court. You know, he was a good kid and good player when I got there, and then he was gone in 6 months. It was like that. He got good real quick and got out of there. So, you know, that was probably the biggest thing for me, just learning some habits off those older guys and really just seeing what it kind of takes to get to that level. That's something I've experienced firsthand, something I was able to see, and easily the best thing for me. With that also, there's probably 30 guys in that program, the NBA Academy and then the Basketball Australia. They're kind of combined. And, you know, it's a training group. So we train against each other every day. We're going at each other. We're not really playing that many games. So it's just training. And, you know, when we do get to that in season, we're playing against men. We were in a men's league. So, you know, my tall, skinny frame, I learned real quick how to hold my own and, yeah, not just be the little guy out there.
Nah, but go ahead. Keep talking about that, because, you know, Luca, he started off real young overseas as well. What's it like playing against grown men especially at 15 years old. Again, you talked about you being this tall, lanky kid, but you have to hold your own. You got no choice because these guys are looking to dominate you. They don't care how old you are. How was it mentally to prepare for that?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously 16 years old, 16, 17 especially, really trying to find my own and not get punked by these older guys, it's taxing. Like, it's a process, and I'm not just going to say it was, oh, yeah, there's one simple way, and I found out. Heck, I'm still figuring it out, you know, playing some of the seniors over here, same thing. So, you know, it's not just one simple thing, but definitely the mental side of it for me, just learning how to be okay with maybe getting scored on a couple of times, but not letting that change the way I play, you know, getting back down the other end and hitting a three, whatever it is, or just setting a good screen so my guy can score. Just, yeah, whatever it is, really learning to not let what anyone else does affect me. So I'd say that's the biggest takeaway that I found with playing against, you know, those guys. And you ask anyone around our program, I'm known for being pretty hard on myself, so I still struggle with that, you know? That's not something I can just give advice on and say I'm perfect at. So definitely a learning thing for me. And I think with those old guys especially, you know, I'd want to do my best. I'd want to keep up. But, you know, they've still got 10-plus years in the bag on me. So at the end of the day, I'm in a good spot.
I was told that through the NBA Academy, you had a chance to be able to encounter some snow. Something that you weren't able to do back home when you first came over here to the States. What was that first experience like?
So that's I had seen snow before that.
Okay.
It wasn't my first time. There's some mountains down south in Australia.
Okay.
Closer to Antarctica.
And,
you know, I'd gone skiing there. So, you know, I'd gone skiing before.
Yeah.
My fair share. But
got you.
What did get me, though, was when I came over here, got into Providence. With the NBA Academy, we went on a trip to New York and Connecticut, Providence, and it got down to like negative 20 Celsius, so maybe like negative 10 Fahrenheit. I'm not sure what that is.
I think so, if my calculations are correct. Yeah.
Zero Fahrenheit?
Mm-hmm.
Cold.
Nah, definitely cold.
And you know, that was a shock.
Yeah, that's negative 4 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, bro, I'm good.
Yeah, that was definitely something. And then we got here, got down to Utah. That was cold. We had a pretty cold couple of weeks here. And you know, I think I've set myself in. I'm used to it now. So
what was your journey to UWE?
Yeah, look, really, really cool, really interesting. So coming from the NBA Academy, I'll say it myself, I wasn't that highly recruited. Like, I'm getting kind of, I want to say, shadowed by these guys that are just, you know, they're really good. I've played with a lot of guys that are playing in college right now. They're at some really good schools and doing really well for themselves. There's some guys playing back home in Australia. They're doing really well for themselves. And I guess, you know, I just wasn't in that spot in the rotation to really shine. And, you know, I didn't get recruited as highly as maybe I would like to be. And that was definitely something challenging mentally for me, just, you know, it was humbling, like learning where I'm at and yeah, whatever. But what did come out of it was a really good program, and I'm absolutely happy to be here. So basically Coach Snow called me up, Craig Snow, called my coaches. He just said, you know, what's up with this guy? How's he doing? What can he do? And, you know, they gave him the all clear to give the chat to me. So I got on the phone with him, and really I wasn't talking to very many other schools, maybe one or two. So I was talking with him, and really what I noticed was just how good this guy was at talking and the relationship he was building with me. So, you know, call it his job, call it the guy he is, I'm not sure. But anyway, yeah, got talking with him, talked to Rags, Coach Ragland, and yeah, just the relationship I was able to build with those guys over the phone was awesome. As I said, I was talking to a couple of other schools, and it wasn't even close. Like, the effort these guys are putting in, talking to me, just how kind of willing they were to answer my questions that I had. And just that relationship I was able to build over the phone was, you know, really important, I think, for me. And I was able to, as much as they were asking me questions about myself, what I like to do, I was asking them questions. I was giving them a pretty hard time. I was viewing them myself. But and then it was funny, I didn't actually get a visit to come here because I probably made the decision a little later than I would have liked to.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of left things a little, you know, we had to get through my commitment quick. And next thing you know, we had Coach Sammy running around the campus on a FaceTime showing me some of the buildings around here with my parents. And that was what that was like. And that was my visit. A good FaceTime call.
So, Josh, you talked about not being able to have like an official visit. You got Coach Sammy running around campus trying to show you campus over a FaceTime. So when you finally got here on campus, was anything that you expected to be? What was your thinking process on it?
My first thing was I got here in the summer and I was like, wow, it's hot. You know, it was, I got off the plane and I was in my sweats because, you know, we just come from winter in Australia and that was a quick change. But, I got walking around campus and I really, you know, it's got everything I need. I have no issues with it. It's probably a bit smaller than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I don't mind that. I do not mind the short walks to class. and then seeing the basketball hall, seeing the weight room, the dining hall, my common rooms, my room, you know, that was all really cool to see in person and just kind of make it my home and see that this is a place I can flourish. You know, I was really happy with what I saw.
What was it like to have your mom come over?
That was something we talked about for a while, me and her, and, you know, even before I'd come to college.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to visit me at some point. And that was awesome. I loved it. And the plan actually was originally that she was going to come while we did that trip to Vegas. We had a trip to Vegas planned. I believe it was in the summer or maybe right after the summer, but that got canceled. The team was going to go to Vegas and
mm-hmm.
play, but that got canceled, I guess, for whatever reason. So we kind of looked up, saw that there were some home games all in a row, and, we said, get up here, Mom. And so she came up with my stepdad and, that was awesome. And I guess one of my games showed it. I had a career high while she was watching. So, you know, that was awesome. And just that she could see that, see where I was living, see the people I was hanging out with, meet my coaches in person, and really just get a feel for the space I was living in, the space I was working in every day. You know, I think it puts her mind at ease too, just knowing I'm having a good time and I'm safe.
Something that I find very interesting, right? You look at the game of basketball just so as a game, right? It's so simple. Usually, like, people talk about how, you know, American basketball players talk about, you know, playing FIBA or things of that nature. Like, there are different rules. Some overseas guys talk about how, like, playing in the NBA is different, but you don't see it that way. You just see it as it's basketball. There's nothing complicated about it. Where do you think that mindset comes from?
For sure, my coaches at the academy, you know, as I said, I used to be, still am, pretty hard on myself. And basically their answer was, you know, hey, it's just basketball. We're playing a game right now. We're here to win.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, this is just a game. So, you know, there's, and I said it to Jevin, but there's a wood floor and two orange rings that it doesn't change no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really cool to look at. And definitely where I got to see that in perspective was when I went to Africa. With the NBA Academy, we went with, so there was four of us, three other guys came with, and we played in Senegal. And just seeing how those guys play basketball, you know, they really don't have anything, some of those guys. So just looking at how they were able to put a, you know, instead of wearing gloves while you're dribbling to get your ball handling, they were putting plastic bags around, and yeah, just the hoops they had. And that was where I really saw that into perspective, and seeing how those kids grow up, it was like, you know, this is just a game. People love it. There's some white lines on the court. Mm-hmm. Let's stay between them.
I respect that. And you also said something about, you find it wild how that people pay to watch you play.
Oh man.
Like I said, it's crazy to think about, because, you know, it's so different over here, right? Those are all things that, like, you glamour for, like, you long for. But it's crazy, like, this is really just it's simple. Like, although a lot of people make it so complicated, it's just a simple game.
Yeah. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. There's a bunch of ins and outs to basketball. Like, you know, if he does this, I do that, blah, blah. But, yeah, as you say, as I say, it is very simple at its nail. But there's a bunch of niche little things that, you know, I'm still learning. And there is difference between the FIBA game, the American game. But yeah, I definitely said that to Walls when I first got here. Mm-hmm. He was. But, you know, that really came from just me knowing how, when I got here, the appreciation I was receiving, like, oh, you know, you can move great. You're athletic. You can shoot. This is what everyone's telling me, our fans. You know, you're a great shooter. You can move your feet. You block shots. Like, set great screens, blah, blah, blah. You're a great teammate. But I'm just sitting like, you know, I've been doing this. I've been at the academy. I've been doing this. We, at the academy, we didn't have any fans. That was just a big closed doors training group. Like, no fans, no games. So, you know, I'm sitting here like, I really haven't changed the way I've played basketball in the last 2 years. You know, I've gotten better at certain things, but I've been doing this. And now all of a sudden it was just so surreal for me that people want to pay to watch me play it. Mm-hmm. And I know it's college sports and they like Evansville. And yeah, it was just really amazing to me to see that there was appreciation for the sport and myself, really. And just looking at, you know, how much I can appreciate that, the people wanting to support, you know, what I like to do and my craft, you know. So although it sounds awful, like, I can't believe people pay to watch me play or watch us play, you know, I really appreciate it. And it's, you know, it's the only reason I can do what I'm doing and what we do.
I don't think it's awful at all, because, I mean, as you just said, it was closed doors. Right. So nobody's able to see or really appreciate the work and the mindset and the work ethic that you're putting into it. Right. So would you say, like, that first game or whatever that you played in front of fans, was it kind of like a culture shock?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know what we had at our season opener. I'm talking about Miami, Ohio. But yeah, I came in, had a pretty good first game. I was really happy with myself, happy with the way I played, happy with how we played as a team. And, you know, I remember reading it in the write-up after the game, or I let out a scream or whatever after I blocked the final shot. I don't remember exactly what it said, but, you know, it was just like, wow, there's people cheering right now. You know, this is awesome. So, you know, that was kind of the moment I realized that, yeah, this can be a really great home for me, and I'm excited to see what we can build going on in the future.
In one of UE's basketball reels that you guys had after practice, you were asked who your NBA comps were, right? And you said Lauri Markkanen. What is it about Lauri Markkanen's game that you believe translates to you so much?
Really, for me, that's like, you know, I could take bits and pieces from any big man's game and what I want to be. Like, you know, who wouldn't want to be as dominant as Embiid? Who wouldn't want to pass like Jokic? But for me, I feel like Lauri Markkanen just really resembles what I see myself getting to when I'm 26, 27, you know, when I'm playing my best basketball at that. I mean, I don't know when it'll be, but when I'm playing my best basketball, I see that's, you know, the physical form I could get to. He's built like a horse, you know. So that's what I want to get to. And then he also stretches it out, shoots the three really well, and can get downhill on, you know, anyone. But as I said before, I feel like he just does a great balance of being able to score on those, you know, the guards when they switch onto you, and then scoring on his own matchup to make the guard switch onto you. So, yeah, really, I just feel like that's everything I want to be, and he's someone I really look up to.
When did you know that would be a plus for you, being able to spread the floor and shoot the three?
Honestly, right when I got here. You know, I've always been able to shoot the ball, but like, and I'd worked on it. Don't get me wrong. I've worked on my shot for ages. I've gone through, you know, I used to have a crazy form, but we worked that out in the lab and, you know, got my coaches back at the academy, and that was the best thing for me. Just really working on it every day. We're shooting. And yeah, when I got here, it was just like, wow, I really saw a big jump in my shooting percentage and the confidence I had to shoot the ball just changed. I'm not sure what the stats are or what I finished with at the end of the season or anything like that. I'm not a big stats guy, but you know, I remember that my first few games, I actually didn't make a three until Chattanooga. So I'm not sure how many games we played before that. But my first three was against Chattanooga while we were having that comeback and that 20-point comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that just sparked something in me. I had the confidence to shoot the ball while we were down 10 in a crucial moment of the game and see that go through the net. That just kind of sparked a fire in me, and that's a shot I really remember, and I saw it on CBS the next day.
Mm.
But, you know, that was pretty cool. So, yeah, and then just in the training, seeing how my shot's fallen, seeing while I'm shooting on the gun, watching it fall, but, yeah, really looking at that can be a threat of my game, kind of where it came here.
Well, some fun stuff. What are some of your favorite Australian slang?
I think there's actually a lot I say and don't realize that they're Australian slang. I'll say like, yeah, nah, a lot, which is just means no. Some of my roomies make fun of me for that. Or like, you know, just the simple things like how you going and how are you going? What the Americans say. Yeah, just.
You wear thongs back home?
I do. So for the people listening, that's what you guys call a sandal, mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep, flip-flop.
So there's a little, like a little strap that goes between your big toe and your second toe, mm-hmm. So it looks like a thong for your feet. I guess that's where that comes from.
I got you. How are plane rides?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go to Australia, which I highly recommend, you want to go visit, the shortest flight you can take is 14 hours, LA to Brisbane. Straight from the US, of course. No stops. So, you know, you got to stop. At that point, you can't think of it as a, you know, I'm going on a plane. You're like, you got to think of it as, this is what I'm doing today. Today, I am going to be sitting on a plane. That's how you have to get your mind right. And you got to get in that frame of mind. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there, you know, watching your eighth movie thinking, what am I doing? But yeah, look, that's kind of the key to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I assume you're talking about the plane from Australia to...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what did I watch? I remember watching... I went through a series. I watched the whole Halo series. I remember that, which I thought was awesome because I'm not really a guy that pays for Netflix or Disney or mm-hmm. whatever. So, you know, I watched the entire Halo series on the plane. And The Matrix. I watched all of The Matrix movies. I remember that. It's funny to talk about. But on the plus side, the travel that we do now, like the 2-3 hour car rides, bus rides, or the, you know, 2 hour plane rides, they seem like absolutely nothing. I remember as a kid sitting in the car like, you know, are we nearly there yet? To annoying my parents in the front.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's no longer a thing for me. It's like, travel is something I find pretty easy now. But yeah, look, as a 6'10 male with some long legs, that definitely gets the best of me, the leg room.
What's the rundown in running with kangaroos? Like, how does that happen?
All right, you've definitely seen a lot of videos on the internet. It's not always like that. It's nearly never like that. But so I don't know if many Americans, I don't know if any Americans know this stat, but there's about, I think there's just under 30 million people in Australia. There's about 55 million kangaroos.
Really?
So almost for every Australian, there's two kangaroos. So you think of that one, that's pretty nuts. But I don't know. I guess the kangaroos see a 6'10 guy walking past at them. Yes, but look, there's actually none where I'm from. So Brisbane. You know, right in the city, you know, you're never going to find them in the dead city. But you go out into the outback, we call it. That's our Nevada. That's our desert. But, you know, Outback Steakhouse, that's where that comes from. We call it the Outback.
Really?
Yep. So, you know, anywhere that's the red dirt in Australia is the Outback. So Outback Steakhouse, there you go. But, yeah, the kangaroos, they kind of travel in packs and, I guess they, you know, they're kind of minding their own business, but there was definitely one time that scared the piss out of me. I was just walking by myself down this bush and bush trail, and I remember hearing this rustling in the bushes, and then probably like 10 meters in front of me, there's like 10 kangaroos that go in front of my path. Just they're all in packs, and the mums with the joeys, and that's a baby kangaroo, Joey. The mums with the joeys, and then there's this one dad, like big kangaroo at the back, and he kind of just stops, looks at me, and then, you know, that's when you're like just looking at each other like, I'm not going to do anything if you're not going to do anything. So I think he got that from me, and then he went on his way, and I went on my way quick.
So I was told that while you guys were down at the CBI at Daytona Beach in Florida, you introduced the team to the art of body surfing?
Dude, you guys, I taught probably half the team how to body surf or show them up. So,
what? How? Like, what is that?
You know, when a wave rolls in, you see it's about to break, about to crash, you jump, you know, kind of with it, and then put your arms like a triangle above your head, like you're about to dive into water, and then seriously, the wave just pushes you. But it's something I've been doing for years now, and how I, you know, once I got good at boogie boarding, which most people can do, I think. You know, a boogie board?
No.
Like a. You know, there's the surfboards, the really long ones.
Yeah.
And there's like the short, fat boards.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not sure what you call that, but I would say that's a boogie board.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, once I learned how to do that and kind of got bored of it, I saw my dad body surfing. I'm like, you know, what's up with this? Teach me. And, yeah, this 9-year-old Aussie Josh learning to ride the waves with his probably 6-foot body at the 9 years old. I don't know how tall I was. Yeah, honestly, I'd say around the coastal areas, I'd say probably 7 out of 10 fit people would know how to body surf. But it's not a crazy thing. Like, honestly, I'm so freaked out that my team thought it was so crazy I could do that. Because if I went to the beach with any of my teammates back in Australia, you know, we're all doing that together.
Dude, you're surfing with your body. Like, when I was told that, I was like, okay, like I'm confused. And then I was showed a video and I was like, okay, the concept, like the art of it looks like amazing and beautiful. But I'm just like, first off, you're 6'10". How do you have that much like just body control and awareness just doing that? And I'm just like, yeah, nah, that actually looks terrifying. Like B-Dub told me like the water carries you like 150 feet. Like, yeah, yeah, that's kind of crazy. I'm not going to lie. That's scary also. I'm being very, very serious. That's actually terrifying to me.
Yeah, look, I mean, Tyler Myers didn't have a problem. He was loving it. Mike Day was a bit too big. He tried, but he kept sinking. So props to him for trying. Oh, man.
Do you have any other hidden talents?
I can play guitar, actually.
Really?
So, you know, I'm no, like, Banjo Patterson on the banjo, but I'm not... Is that enough?
No, I've heard of him.
Okay, shouldn't be referencing guys I don't know. Yeah, look, I'm no Jimi Hendrix. There we go. But I'll give you a good, you know, Wonderwall or a good... I'll give you a good love song, but on the acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How long have you been playing?
So I played as a kid when I was here. Probably like, you know, just in primary school. Sorry, elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 7, 8 years old, and it came down to guitar or basketball. And looking at how big I was as a kid, I was like, basketball sounds like a pretty good option right now. And I like playing basketball. And then I gave it up. I completely gave it up. And when I came here, I met this really great family. Rick and Amy Morphew, if you end up watching this, listen to this. Funny story, I got in with the church here. I'm a faithful Christian. I really believe in God. And that, you know, that's why I'm here. But I got here and it's a Sunday and I don't know my teammates that well. It's first week of summer that I'm here. And I search on Google Maps, church is near me. I see one that's maybe 3 Ks away, kilometers away. And I look on Google Maps. You know, it's a good enough walk, but mm-hmm. I'm willing. So put on my shoes and I'm down the road. Anyway, I find this tiny building and Google Maps is telling me that that's where the church is. And I'm like, all right. I kind of look outside the door and this lady pops her head out saying, are you looking for someone? And I'm like, I think I'm looking for you. So anyway, she takes me inside. I meet the guys. I listen to the service and meet the family. And, you know, I got really in touch with them and they've been great to me here. But, yeah, they kind of just let me rock around a bit. And, you know, sometimes if I go over to their place, I'll give a go on the guitar. But that kind of brought something back into me. And I basically remembered everything I'd learned when I was that young. It all came back to me. So
that's dope.
It was awesome.
You talked about, real quick, very Christian, a very Christian man, very religious, right? And we're in a world where you see that, like, it may or may not be something that you can be proud of or unashamed of, but what's it like being able to say that, yes, I am a Christian?
Look, for me, that's been a real, it's been a real battle for me and like a life-changing thing for me that, seriously, just over this past year of being here in America, I feel like I've really changed as a man and a person. I've always been close with God and I've been brought up as a Christian, but felt like I really found it, him, this year. In Australia and, you know, at the academy, it's not a very Christian country. Like, you know, I probably wouldn't make the argument that America is a Christian country, but the ratio is definitely higher, than, especially in the Midwest where we are. But Australia, not at all. Like it's accepted, but you know, you go out talking about your faith, it's almost frowned upon over there. So seriously, I, as much as I hate to say it, kind of lost it a bit. I never went away and said, you know, God, I'm not with you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it really just lost kind of a piece of me and who I am. And, you know, here I've made a really great community for myself coming here, and people have been so supportive to me. I got involved with the FCA over at USI. We don't have one here right now, but that's in the works, actually. So I got involved with the FCA guys at USI. Obviously, Coach Rags, very devout man, and he's been great to me, and Ben Humrickhouse, too.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we've Tanner, not Christian, but believes in Jesus, and Mike Day. So we actually during the summer decided we were going to start up a little Bible study, and we were doing that as a group of four, and then Dakota came in, Chandler, and yeah, we just decided that we'd make that effort in our lives to, you know, read the Bible more, be more devout Christians, and just kind of show those values that we wanted to but necessarily weren't. You know, I'm not going to go out there and say I'm the perfect guy. I'm not going to say I don't cuss, but that's something that, you know, personally I really like to work on, and I think it's really important to be able to share your faith, and especially now, be able to share your faith and not be ashamed of what you believe in and who you are.
That's what's up, man. So to wrap things up, I'm going to ask you some speed round questions. You ready for this? I think they're easy. I think they're easy. So we got Michael Jordan and LeBron. Get dunked on or get crossed?
Crossed as a big man. As a big man, I'd rather be crossed.
Really?
Yep.
Ooh, yeah. Get dunked on is,
Yeah.
Woo! I'll give you that. Dream teammate to play alongside?
LeBron.
Favorite post-game meal?
I love Qdoba. Qdoba, here.
Yeah, Qdoba's, yeah, yeah.
We don't have that back home. We have Chipotle.
Mm-hmm.
But Qdoba here is, we get that quite often.
And last one. Best advice you've received in your basketball career so far?
Being able to control what you can control. Not being worried about, I kind of mentioned it before, but not being worried about what anyone else is doing, and, you know, your journey is your own. Being able to control what you can control, for sure.
Well, Josh, I want to say thank you, man, for joining us, taking the time out of your day to be able to come on here on the Art of the Game podcast. Again, this is Joshua Hughes. Once again, man, thank you, dog.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me. The only thing changing this season, you go against me, then you know that you tweaking, okay? Because, baby, I'm him. I be on 10. Two-stepping in the party. I do not dance. Watch how I move. Make it look easy.